Welcome back. This week on the podcast, I talk with Dr. Joseph Cavallis. Dr. Cavallis is an orthopedic surgeon, and he is the founder of Intuitive. Dr. Joe grew up in Greenville, South Carolina. He was the oldest of five boys. He went on to get his undergraduate degree from Harvard. He got his medical degree from the Medical University of South Carolina, and then he finished his residency at Duke and moved up to Boston to start practicing. During these years, I'm not sure if he knew it or not, but he started to formulate the idea of Intuitive. He started to recognize the importance of nutrition and proper nutrition for patients going in and out of surgery or individuals that have been injured. And since then, he started to figure out a way to create a formula, nutrition formula for his patients. So they are proper, they have proper nutrition going in and out of surgery and for recovery. And within the last few years, he has teamed up with his brother, Steven, who does all things marketing, advertising, branding. And it's two brothers coming from two different career paths and joining together to create really incredible product to really help people recover and make people healthier when they are going through some of the toughest things in their life that might be surgery. He described it to me as, your body will rarely ever go through anything as hard as surgery, and the importance of proper nutrition is at the top of the list for them to recover and get back to themselves as quickly as possible. It was a joy catching up with Dr. Joe. I knew him growing up, and it was just awesome to see what he is doing now and what he is, you know, creating in his life. And if you are interested in Intuitive, or if you are a practicing doctor, if you work with patients, or you're a chiropractor, or if you're in physical therapy or anything like that, where you have patients that are injured or, you know, working to get back to themselves, reach out to them. I think it would be a great option for those individuals. Anybody that's been injured or going through surgery or need physical therapy, reach out to Intuitive. I can link you up directly with them. Their link is also in the show notes. So just go to their website, reach out to them, and they'll be more than happy to work with you. An incredible hospital and organization here in the upstate of South Carolina is Pelham Medical Center. I was, you know, very lucky, and I felt very fortunate to bring them on as a partner, because in a lot of ways, I think the best hospital and operation in South Carolina, and they are 10 minutes from my house. I live in downtown Greenville. They have an incredible leadership. They have incredible surgeons. Everything they do over there is just top notch, and I truly believe they're the best in the state and probably one of the best in the country. They have incredible patient outcomes. They have incredible patient satisfactory rates, all that sort of stuff that you're looking for. And they are just 10 minutes from Greenville. So if you're in the upstate, you know, make sure you look at Pelham Medical Center if you do need something health related. Another sponsor of mine that I got a lot of love and respect for is Spinks. Spinks is a local convenience store here in Greenville, South Carolina, and now they're growing all over the place. But growing up, I just thought they were a convenience store, a nice convenience store. But what I know now about what they do for their communities and how much they give back to their communities is what I got so much love for about Spinks. So when you see Spinks, know they're supporting your community. So stop in and support your local Spinks, because they are supporting you and the communities they are in. Last but not least is Rebel Rabbit. Rebel Rabbit seltzers are on a mission to change the way we socialize. For far too long, we would be drinking alcohol every night. We would go out and socialize, and we think that's what we need to do. Or we get home from work and we want to relax a little bit, so we drink alcohol. Or we're sitting back and relaxing, watching, you know, your favorite show, your football game, and you figure you need to have an alcoholic drink in your hand. That is no more. We know how harmful alcohol is for you, and Rebel Rabbit seltzers are alcohol-free. They're infused with Delta-9 THC, and you can get the same feeling of relaxing a little bit or socializing and fitting in with everybody, but you're not going to get any of the negative harm side effects. So you're going to get great sleep. You're going to be able to wake up productive and be productive in the days following. No hangover. So go to their link in the show notes. You'll get 20% off your order. They can ship directly to your door. Their website is drinkrebelrabbit.com. promo code LIFE20. If you go to the link in the show notes, it'll send you directly to the promo code. So you'll get the discount, but try Rebel Rabbit. If you're just looking for something new, if you're looking for an alternative to alcohol, if you haven't given the show a 5-star rating yet, please go ahead and do that on your listening platform. And without further ado, here's my conversation with Dr. Joseph Cavallis. Dr. Joe Cavallis, what's up, man? Good evening. Thank you for joining me.
Thanks for having me, Sam. Good to be here.
What's a typical day like for you right now, man? I know you got a lot of young ones running around.
Yeah, it's variable. Depends on how much the girls wake up in the middle of the night. I got a 3-year-old and a 6-month-old. So like last night, 6-month-old, she has a cough or an ear infection or something. So she was up a good bit. But luckily the wife was helping out. And then I woke up at like 6:15, get ready, get in the car, meet my first patient in the pre-op area about 7. And then I operated today from 7:30 to 4:30.
Dang.
Came home, made dinner, and then I'm joining you. Put the girls down.
What's the average? I know you do like a lot of hips and knees and other joints possibly, but what's like the average time you spend with a patient during surgery?
So it totally depends on the complexity, but I'd say 2 hours. But for a standard hip or knee replacement, the whole process for the patient's probably more like 5 or 6, between like checking in, anesthesia, getting, you know, they go into the OR, they've got to get the anesthetic, then we got to position them, then you like clean their skin, get them draped out. Then my part, you know, then like the intense, what people think of, like the actual from incision to closure, that's probably like the 90 to 2 hour period. And then, but then there's like, you know, then there's all the cleanup. So it's just, it's funny. It's, you know, it's hard to quantify, but.
Yeah, it's wild. You're right. I always think about like the incision, cutting open, sewing up, that sort of stuff.
I mean, yeah, that's definitely the most intense, but people don't realize like all the other stuff before and after is equally as important. You know, I mean, like that's the setup, right? That's the foundation for all the other stuff.
Obviously, those 2 hours are extremely important, but we're going to get into a lot of like what's important before and after. But I want to know about you, man. You grew up, you're the oldest of a bunch of brothers. What was life like for you growing up?
I mean, it was always fun, always something going on in the house. Yeah, I was the oldest. There's 5 of us. A lot of sports, a lot of rough housing. Our mom's a saint, I'd say. Yeah, she's a total saint. And then, you know, I got into what I got into because my dad did it. So that was kind of fun to watch.
That was going to be my next question. Like with your pops, were you watching him growing up being like pretty early on? That's kind of what you want to get into?
Yeah, I think I went and watched him operate with his mentor when I was 12. And I think that like kind of snagged me. And it kind of put me on the path. And then, you know, as you grow older, you kind of get some other ideas with some stuff. In undergrad for a while, maybe I thought I wanted to go into finance. And then for various reasons, I decided that wasn't what I was interested in. And then when I got into med school, like I looked pretty hard at neurosurgery too, but just came back to orthopedics. I was really fortunate that my parents, both my mom and my dad, would go to Nicaragua and Guatemala and do surgeries for really, you know, like unfortunate and like really bad pathology, stuff that you just wouldn't see much in the States. And I got to go with them on that. And that kind of really rubbed me back into the orthopedic thing, watching those people go. It was called Operation Walk. And you literally have people who are wheelchair. Yeah, you have people who are wheelchair bound and they walk out afterwards. You know, they don't speak a lick of English. And it was, that was super rewarding just to see how, you know, gratifying that was. So that's probably what pulled me back in the most.
Was that, because you spent a year at Clemson, right?
Two
years. What was, did you have a vision that you always wanted to end up in Harvard for undergrad?
No, actually, I mean, you'll laugh, but frankly, it was our mutual friend, Julia Deason, who I went and visited her when I was a freshman, when I was at Clemson for like a weekend. And honestly, it was just like some of the conversations that I had and like, you know, the difference, you know, it's not the classes or anything. It was mostly the difference of like roommates, like the experiences, like listening to what people were talking about at like the dining hall tables and what they're into, that really kind of piqued my interest in a place like that. And then I applied to move schools after from Clemson for whatever, you know, just because I feel like I needed to see a little something else. Been in the South a long time. And she was pretty adamant. She's like, if you're going to apply, like, I really want you to apply here. So I did. And then I got in. It's kind of hard to say no to Harvard. So went up there for the last 2 years of undergrad. That was great.
Were you thinking about finance then?
Yeah, that was when I like kind of got a little bit more of an interest in it, obviously, because that's what the majority of kids that go out of there, they do that or they do consulting. And now a lot of them also go into like Facebook or Google or whatever. That's kind of like the path of least resistance from those schools. But obviously there's a ton of people there that also go into medicine or dental or whatever. But that was where I kind of like, I thought about it. And it just didn't really pan out for whatever reason. I mean, honestly, too, like, let's be honest, I graduated in 2008. That's like the right at the start of the financial crisis. And I actually was like, had a buddy who really wanted me to interview with Lehman Brothers. And like, thank God I didn't do that because I've been fired 6 months after graduating. Or not fired.
Alex or somebody. Yeah.
No, it wouldn't pay a little longer. It was actually like a guy who was a year above me. And he's like, oh, I'm going to go work for Lehman Brothers. This was 2006. He's like, you need to like meet my boss, get you a job, blah, blah, blah. You know, that's the way a lot of this stuff works too, right? As long as you're like a fairly competent guy. And, you know, it's like, again, I was like hemming and hawing, but really it's like retrospect, I was really lucky I didn't, because you know, the company collapsed.
So. Dude, you would have been walking out with a cardboard box and all your cup in your hands, like you see. That's
exactly right.
With med school, what was the conversation like with your pops? I bet he was kind of excited when he heard you were going to go that route.
Yeah, I mean, I think Ben, we'd kind of known that was like in the cards for like, you know, probably through high school. I thought I wanted to do it. Like we said, I had that little dalliance with finance and undergrad, and then I went back. And he was always behind the scenes incredibly excited about it, but he never put any pressure about like which field of medicine I was going to go into or anything like that. But, you know, I mean, he did like, obviously he brought me on the trips, and I think he was excited when the stars aligned and I kind of went into the same thing.
What was the draw to neurosurgery?
I was really into philosophy in undergrad, and I thought that maybe that would be like a really, you know, it's kind of like, it's where consciousness is. I don't know. Yeah, I thought that would be kind of interesting. Yeah, but at the end of the day, we're just not that advanced yet. And neurosurgery, you can either do spine, which is like, you know, part of orthopedics too. There's two ways to be a spine surgeon. You can do orthopedic residency, or you can be a neurosurgeon. Pros and cons probably to going either one. I think, you know, the neurosurgeon will say they're better spine surgeon. Anyway, that's a whole other conversation. But regardless, you can do that. And those patients do pretty well. But then the people that actually operate on the brain just doesn't heal so well. And so I actually went to... in between my first and second year of med school, I went to Tanzania and worked for a non-government organization that was trying to improve like trauma care in the neurosurgical arena throughout Tanzania, which is, you know, probably not the lowest hanging fruit, frankly. Like, it's a lot of resources, but it was still like really eye-opening. We actually got laughed at a lot when we told people why we were there, because obviously they're like, if you're going to spend all this money, why don't you just give out malaria nets? But regardless, I did that. And those patients... you could save their lives, but what they looked like afterwards was just not necessarily as rewarding as I think what it is in orthopedics. What I really like about the field is, you know, by and large, you're getting people back to a really high quality of life, right?
Like, okay, that's a good point. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, that's what I like about, honestly, it's actually it's probably one of the bigger flaws, frankly, I think in medicine. Like, in the last 30 or 40 years, we've done a really good job of extending people's lifespans, but what's the quality that, like, you know, from the age of like 80 to like, you know, 95 or whatever.
Yeah, totally.
We're keeping people alive, but I'm not necessarily, we're not maintaining their lifestyles. I'm not, you know, I mean, who am I to judge, but it's necessarily the life that anybody would choose to live necessarily. Whereas that's the great thing about what I do is I can take somebody who, you know, can't ski, can't golf, can't play tennis, pickleball, whatever, can't run, and you can get them back to that activity. And you can do it when they're, well, you can do it. You know, I have patients, again, the majority of my patients are probably 55 up, but, you know, I've got patients in the 40s who will get back to high level activities. And, you know, that's really rewarding. So that's how I end up kind of settling on what I do.
Yeah. I mean, if you think about it, you can actually like see results right away, which is super rewarding.
Yeah. The other nice thing too is unlike, you know, God bless a lot of the other doctors that deal with chronic disease, because that's just really frustrating. Like, you're just maintaining, or you're trying to prevent it from getting worse. And also, you've got to ask the patients to do things that it's kind of hard to get them to invest in, right? Like somebody who's working on weight loss, you know what I mean? Like, you got to work on behavioral aspects and all sorts of stuff. Whereas you come into me and I can look at an x-ray and be like, yep, you've got arthritis, and I can fix that pretty quick. And obviously I exhaust all non-operative interventions prior to like resorting to surgery, but I always have in the back pocket a really pretty, you know, phenomenally successful treatment for these people. And that's great. Versus, like I was saying, you know, if you're a diabetes doctor, like, you know, they're doing what they do honestly on a day-to-day basis is just much more, I think for me, it would be much more exhausting. Maybe not the stress of it, right? The stress of surgery is unique, but you know, you don't get as many wins.
Yeah. What about are there lifestyle things that individuals do that you can kind of like see and tell early on that could lead them to like a hip or knee?
So I would say that's a great question. I would say, so hip arthritis is, we don't know, but I would say it's like 90% genetic, honestly.
Really?
So there's two different morphology spectrums. You know, the hip's just a ball and a socket joint, and there's a spectrum. You can either be what's called dysplastic, where essentially your cup is more like a dinner plate, or you can have impingement, where essentially your cup's too deep. And everybody, it's a bell curve, right? Everybody falls on the spectrum. And it's a little genetic, and it's also a little bit environmental. Like, that's why we don't swaddle babies' legs anymore, because that caused a lot of dysplasia, because the hip joints weren't going in to form it. But needless to say, between those two things, like, depending on where you fall on that spectrum, that probably dictates whether or not you're going to get arthritis. And then we're not, of course, not talking about people that have, like, inflammatory problems like rheumatoid or lupus.
Mm-hmm.
So hips, 90% that, and then I would say the other 10%, maybe 8%, and then 2%, I don't know. Or, you know, I'm making these up numbers up, but the other 10% is probably like trauma. So like, if you're young and you have like a little fracture, there's certain other things that can happen. You get an accident, or you have a sports injury that can also predispose you. Knees, on the other hand, definitely has some component of that, but knees are incredibly, like, your knee can experience 48 times your body weight. So if you're
if you're
a big person, I would say you're going to have knee problems at some point. It's almost guaranteed, kind of like low back problems, whereas your hips might be fine if you're a big person, right? And then what's interesting about that too is, you have patients come in, somebody's got terrible hip arthritis, you can change their, like, that joint, you do that surgery, you can change that person's life. They, like I said, I've taken people from wheelchair bound to not. It's just like unbelievably rewarding. And you're not going to make them better. The bad thing about the hip is it's hard to make it better with any of the conservative things. You can try them, but they don't work so great. The knee, if you take a patient who's got really bad knee arthritis, you know, like maybe mild knee arthritis, younger, and they're overweight, you have them lose weight. I've had people who have been like, I don't want to do your surgery yet. Like, try losing 50 pounds for me. Go, you know, like right now it's like, go get on Wegovy, go get on Ozempic, your nutritionist, whatever you got to do. And then they'll come back and they're like, doc, my knees don't bother me anymore. Thank you. And then I'll be like, all right, come back. And, you know, like, it'll be 3 years before they come back in. And maybe then it's just for like a cortisone injection, or just to like get another look at the knees. You're like, how am I doing? So that's much more, the knee's much more environmentally dependent. And, you know, if you had an ACL rupture too, you're going to be a little more predisposed and stuff like that.
What about just like being on your feet a lot and like playing a lot of sports? Does it wear down? What is it? Like, when it's bone to bone, you've worn out all year.
Yeah, so that's a really interesting question. I don't actually think we know, honestly. Paradoxically, when people ask, right, like arthritis, I tell them what it is. It's like wrinkles. Like, it just gets worse with time, even if it's perfect. And like, I don't know if everybody knows what a meniscus is, but it's a bumper in between your two bones. By the time you've got bone on bone, that bumper's been extruded. But they've done, and it's degeneratively frayed and torn. They've done studies, though. If you take an MRI, like everybody our age in their 30s, and nobody has any pain in your knee, 30% of us are going to have like some change in the meniscus, like even if you don't have any issue. And so the only way to mitigate that progression is actually stay skinny, like we were talking about, and then stay active. And so there's no good answer to what you were just asking. Like, actually being more active is better because you're fit, you're skinnier, your muscles are stronger, they had more stability. You're not relying as much on those innate structures in your knee. Your muscles are able to actually balance the knee and decompress it some. But then at the same time, if you're very active and you get an injury or like, you know, have a repetitive use injury, yeah, that might predispose you, but it's almost impossible. Like I'll have people come in and they're like, oh, I'm a marathon runner. I did this. And then I'll have other patients who come in and are marathon runners or like ultra marathon runners and the knees look perfect. Yeah. So it's not necessarily that simple. And that's probably where it gets into some of that genetic stuff that we just don't have a good enough grasp on yet. Combined with, you know, you might have even maybe injured your knee in some really micro way that it bothered you and you took some Advil when you were 20. And that actually, honestly, that laid the foundation for you to have problems down the line. And I just don't think you have a good enough grasp on how that actually plays out.
Yeah, totally. And everybody's so different in their own ways. Like I've always thought like the more active you stay, really maybe the better off you'll be. But
I think that, well, I mean, I think we could probably, I'm pretty confident you can say that for sure. I mean, like if you're going to the gym and you're working out and as long as you got good form and you're not causing injuries to yourself, you're going to be better. I mean, like maintenance of muscle mass is incredibly important. You know, like they've done like for like longevity and living long times, there's a couple of interesting things. Like the faster people walk, the longer they live. And what that means is like relative to themselves. So like when people start to walk slower, they're like, you can, it's a predictor that they're about to have a little bit of a decline health wise. And then, you know, VO2 max, right? Which is an indication of cardiopulmonary fitness. Like that's the other thing that'll predict longevity. Those two things.
Like, yeah, you see the blue zone people, man. It's like those people in those like hilly areas in like Italy and Greece, just walking all over the place.
It looks exactly right. Yeah. All the people live to be 100 live on like these huge inclines and walk up and down stairs all day.
Yeah. You see them like walking to church every day and it's a freaking huge incline to get there. What are some of the other treatments? And you named a few of them, but other treatments before you might get to surgery.
Yeah. So the first and lowest hanging fruit is actually physical fitness. So, you know, and you come through my office, the way I'm probably going to have you do that is go to see a physical therapist. I will say, you know, by and large, most Americans, it's probably just more modern life. I'm sure this is fairly common across the globe. Your quads are weak. You don't engage your glutes. You're a little overweight. And if you can, and if we can kind of optimize that, get your weight under a little better control, really get you some more core strength, namely, again, your quads, your hamstrings, and your glutes, a lot of like early on things. Like that's for honestly, for kids, people our age, that's like probably the most important. And, you know, cardio, everybody talks about cardio, but doing some strength training several times a week is probably the best, and it'll pay dividends. That's like kind of make an investment in the bank now for us when we're much older.
Yeah.
So that's where you start. Next step up is symptomatic treatment. And that's where, you know, I have some people that come in and are like, well, it only bothers me when I run like 10 miles. Mm-hmm. And so I'll say, well, first off, you could just, you know, like not do that, but most people don't want to give that up. And then the next thing is, it's like, well, you could maybe take on as needed some occasional anti-inflammatories. And that's fine as long as they don't need them, not needing them every day. Next step after that is you can start to talk about some of the stuff that's a little bit more fringe. It's FDA approved, but insurance won't cover it. That's stem cells or the PRP biologics. What else to tell you about that? There is huge, I think, potential for that. And they work, but not the way a lot of people on the internet like to espouse. So I think some unscrupulous people will tell you like, oh, it's going to heal your arthritis, or it's going to regrow tendons, or it's, you know, it's going to restore and rejuvenate. And it might, but the way I described it when I gave a talk on this one time was basically what we're doing is we're taking, like, if you want to bake a cake, right? It's like taking what we're doing right now is we're taking the ingredients. We're taking like flour, milk, sugar, butter, throwing it in the oven without any like, you know, sequence, no like container, you know, that's just, and like, sometimes guess what? Like it'll come out and you might get like, you might produce some nice stuff, and that's how it works right now. So sometimes it'll work. And I think it's probably doing it because it produces some, like, it stimulates your body's own healing potential to some degree, or might quiet down some of the inflammation that's going on. But then it's, you know, we're not to the point yet where we've figured out the recipe in terms of the sequence, exactly what you need, you know, how much of which of the different elements that we're actually doing when we deliver those stem cells, that PRP or whatever. But I do, again, for younger patients in particular, that can be actually pretty helpful. And that's coming off of also like people, they've done these studies where if you tear your ACL and you have a meniscus tear at the same time, there's a bunch of blood in your knee, those patients actually do better. The ones that bled into the knee, the meniscus is more likely to repair. And that's kind of, that's the way these things right now are working.
Got it.
And then the next step after that, at least from what I do a lot of, is you can do like pain management stuff. So that's injections of various things.
Either I know my dad started trying that, like injections first, but
yeah, I mean, honestly, I think it's probably a good next step, because frankly, it's kind of the next, right, the last one before surgery. And so if it can delay surgery a bit, that's probably in the best, best interest.
Which might be interesting. I think it's, and you mentioned like it's, if you, to prevent a lot of these, it could be like your weight, it could just be like staying healthy. And a lot of that has to do with nutrition. But what I didn't realize was how important nutrition is, like leading into surgeries or some of these treatments. When was that like a light bulb for you?
Yeah. So it probably happened when I was during my residency, orthopedic residency training at Duke. So right around this time, we started doing these things called value bundled care for surgery, which basically said that the insurer told the hospital that they were going to give them X dollars. And if patients had problems above and beyond, that would come out of those dollars.
Mm-hmm.
So interesting that when I was there at Duke, what they did was they set off they went regressionally through the data, and then they had a bunch of cutoffs where they're like, patients are too high risk. So it was, and some of them were hard stops, and some of them we would send patients to tweak to get better. BMI was one of these. So, you know, being overweight was one. Diabetes being poorly controlled is a huge one. So we'd send you to an endocrinologist. If your blood levels are low, we'd send you to a hematologist to like your anemia workup to get tweaked. And then one that I noticed that we didn't do anything about, and I was like, why not, was all these nutrition markers. Mm-hmm.
Like blood work?
You know, they'd be like,
work?
Yeah, you'd be blood. They would get a bunch of before surgery labs. You know, it's like your basic blood levels, which, you know, again, if those are low, we'll send you to the hematologist. We get your A1C, which is a 3-month look at what your diabetic control is like. And then they would do these nutritional like labs in addition to like your weight and your height for your BMI. And again, if those were below certain metrics, we would just, not me personally, but the hospital would do it. You know, actually, it's kind of upsetting to some of the surgeons, because you're telling me they were, you know, it was taken out of their controls when they could do these patients. Mm-hmm. But it was interesting to me. I was like, this seems, you know, it's astounding how many people actually had these nutritional problems. And then that we were just kind of like set them free, basically just saying, oh, work on your nutrition, come back when you feel like you've like made this better.
Which that's tough for the patient.
Yeah, it's really tough. And especially some of these people, you know, don't have the education, or they don't know exactly what the right thing to be doing with their diet is. And so that was like when the first time I thought I was like, man, this is probably like a little bit of an unmet need. And then throughout the same time, we really got orthopedics in general. Most of the research was on infection prevention, infection management, and then also pre-optimization. So making patients as ready or robust for surgery as possible. And again, the pre-optimization was really focused more on these other medical things, not necessarily like something as day-to-day and really important as just nutrition.
Mm-hmm.
Interestingly, I would actually say the general surgeons are a little bit ahead of us in this regard, because they've been working with the bariatric, like with the weight loss patients. And so they institute something called the early enhanced recovery after surgery protocol. And part of this for them was patients get nutritional supplements before and after surgery. And so it stood to reason from my like thought process that why wouldn't we do this for orthopedics? And then I actually, my first job was at Tufts Medical Center in downtown Boston. And that serves a little bit of like a tale of two worlds. There's like, you know, very affluent people in downtown Boston. There's also, it serves a little bit of the more disadvantaged community. And one thing that they found that they needed to do was they just gave everybody nutritional supplements that came back to get surgery, because we took care of a lot of people, like, you know, who just maybe didn't have the best home environment, the social setup. And it made, again, intuitive sense to me. And I was like, why wouldn't we be doing this? Why wouldn't everybody be doing this? And it was during this time, though, that the product that we were using
was made by... What was the product then?
Yeah, it was... it was called Nestle. It's a Nestle. Like the behemoths in this area are Nestle and Ensure. And honestly, the behemoths, because they also supply like a lot of the other medical nutrition. So like there's like IV nutrition for people in the ICU or can't take orals or tube feeds. Like they're doing all that. And so this just was like kind of an add-on. But it was called Nestle Impact Factor. And it was a surgery-specific formulation that they were using for a lot of bariatric patients. And we started using it for our hip and knee and spine patients. But it tasted terrible. Like they had to freeze it. It was heavy. Like it came already mixed. But the problem with that was a lot of my patients were like complaining about how heavy it was. It was difficult. When we gave it to them, they like didn't know how to get it back home. And like really, a lot of them were just like, I had to choke that thing down. It was awful. So around this time, I was like, you know, and it also was lacking some of the other like aspects of things in nutrition that I thought were helpful. You know, it was focused on mostly just it was focused on one aspect of nutrition, namely the macronutrients, which, you know, that's proteins, carbs, and fats. But micronutrients are incredibly important as well. And so essentially between the bad taste, it being a little bit cumbersome for the patients, and then the lack of like maybe some more refinement in terms of exactly what I wanted in the formulation, I kind of set out to find somebody to help me make something of my own. And luckily, after over a year of looking and just, you know, having the right conversations, found somebody that was in the space, already doing this a lot, open to working with, you know, entrepreneurs and startups. And so helped us come up with a product that tasted great and checked all the boxes in terms of what I was looking to have my patients take before surgery. And so out of that, we decided to found the company called Intuitive for short for Immunologically Intuitive.
Nice.
With the idea being that, you know, it would make you, from a nutrition standpoint, it would bolster you to get you as ready as we can in a short period of time, right? For the amount of time that I basically got some access to influence your life, to get you ready for that surgical procedure. And you know, at the end of the day, it's one of these things where it's the biggest thing I think we should do right now is just, I'm not sure, like you were saying, I don't think anybody else really, it's not something that's, even though I think it's like kind of like duh, intuitive, how do people not realize this? And I mean, it's not something that I think a lot of people have thought about before. It's starting to get a little bit, you know, more play in the press, and the literature's kind of like one of the hot topics right now. There's tons of level one studies, which means they're randomized, like placebo and non, in orthopedics, where we can show that patients have less muscle loss and their fractures heal better. They have less wound complications, less risk of an infection. They actually have less like major complications like heart attack and renal problems. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, the evidence is really there to support what we're doing. It's just, we got to get the word out that this is important for people to do.
Yeah.
And the other thing, like the way I think about it is, you know, like I'm young and I don't think I'm malnourished, although I haven't given myself the blood test, but I'm pretty confident I'm not. My wife does a good job of making sure I get the right stuff in my body. But, you know, I work out, I strength train several times a week. And after I do, I'm taking, you know, a Costco protein supplement. Right. And so people are going to surgery and like, that's the most intense workout they're ever going to, physiologic stress they're ever going to experience. So why would they not be doing the same thing and maybe just a little bit more of a specialized formulation at that same time?
I don't know the percentages, but the amount of people that don't know the proper nutrients they need on a daily basis is mind blowing to me. Like even my best friends, they'll be asking me these questions. I'm like, you don't know this, man. Like you need to be eating this amount of protein and this amount of water. Like, it's really, really important.
Rebel Rabbit is on a mission to provide a healthier and smarter way to socialize and drink. Their alcohol-free, cannabis-infused seltzers are perfect for anybody just trying to kick back and relax after a hard day at work or on the golf course with your friends or hanging out at a party and you want to wake up and feel better the next day. Their seltzers are perfect for you. They are a great alternative to alcohol as well. Their website is drinkrebelrabbit.com. Use promo code LIFE20. You'll get 20% off your order. That link is in the show notes. But join the mission and start drinking and socializing smarter with Rebel Rabbit Seltzers.
With the risk, if somebody is not,
they have poor nutrition going into a surgery. And this obviously goes into after surgery too, but what are some of the big risk factors?
Frankly, the biggest one is like a poor healing response. And what I mean into that is also the one, at least for me in orthopedics, probably for everybody, is infection. If you get infection, especially in what I do, so like or spine surgery, be this or any, honestly, anything that's implantable, that's like a, if it's on a non-biologic surface, the infection, you can't just treat that with antibiotics. That's another trip to the OR. And then it's long-term antibiotics, and it's like, that's bad news. Honestly, people don't know this, but the mortality rate, if you get an infection in your hip or knee, like what I do, over 5 years is worse than all the most common cancers, except for lung. So it's worse than breast, like renal, you know, GI, colon, all that stuff. So those are bad problems. And what I'll tell you is, everybody likes to think I do so much stuff in the OR to prevent there being any bugs, but at the end of the day, we're never doing sterile surgery. It's always this race between the number of what we call colony forming units. Basically, it's just like a fancy way to say number of bacterial cells in your immune system. So like you work out, you're healthy, you're well malnourished. You could probably, I'm going to make this number up, but you could probably handle like 10,000 bacteria in a wound and your immune system would wipe it. But somebody who's older, frailer, has more like medical problems, most like diabetes, vascular disease, they're a smoker, and they're malnourished, that person, maybe they get 100 cells in their wound, they're going to get an infection.
Yeah.
So it's just this balance. So then you just, what you got to do before surgery is get people smoking less so their blood flow is better, get their diabetes optimized, and get their nutrition up so that their immune function is at a level that's going to allow them to get through that surgery safely.
With Intuitive, you said the first idea popped in your head when you were in medical school. When was the first like product you got?
2021. Yeah, I think 2021 was when we first had the product in hand.
How long were you testing and trying to figure out the mix of stuff?
Two years before that was like going through the ringer, trying to find the right producer and make sure that it would hit all the check boxes. And, you know, I mean, I'll tell you this right now, it'll probably forever be a little bit of a product in evolution. I think if we weren't updating ourselves as more comes to the forefront of knowledge in the literature, I don't think that we would be offering patients the type of product that we'd be proud to provide for people and have them take. But, you know, I think we're pretty happy with the formulation as it is. That being said, I do see the opportunity for tweaks or maybe add-ons and adjuncts, or you can change the duration, the course, and that sort of thing.
I mean, I think in that space, it always has to be a continuing process of changing and mixing with what it is. You know, if somebody says they come into you, they have poor nutrition, like what would your suggestion be to them to take on a daily basis, or for how long? You know, what is that?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So there's not any literature that's conclusive about the optimal dosing or duration. So then it's a little bit of a what's pragmatic. You know, it's like when are you going to get the patient? When are they actually going to listen to you? And I'm a pretty practical guy. I like to think of myself as a realist. So I want to ask patients to do something that I actually think that they're going to follow through on. Mm-hmm. And so again, I don't screen people for malnutrition necessarily unless I'm worried about them. I just ask everybody to do this, to do the preoperative protein work. And then I don't want to be like, you know, pushy about it because I'm the doctor and this is a separate venture. So when they come through, it's actually my PA does a pre-op appointment, goes through a bunch of stuff. Honestly, a lot of it's like what to expect before surgery. We have them use special soaps 5 days before surgery. We ask you to change your sheets the night before surgery. A lot of it's, you know, infection prevention based stuff. And then we also say, we really want you to supplement your nutrition. You're welcome to do that on your own. If you've got like a good, you know, protein supplement and some multivitamins you want to take. That being said, there's some vitamins that we ask you not to take before surgery because they thin your blood. So you got to be careful there. Mm-hmm. And then we also say, or, you know, we've got this product that she'll say that Dr. Cavallis developed specifically for this. And you're welcome to have that, but you know, we don't want to force it upon anyone. The most important thing for me, honestly, at the end of the day, is I just want them to be taking any extra appropriate nutrients before surgery. And we ask him to do it for 5 days because I just think that's pragmatically what people are most likely to do.
And honestly, I tell everybody, you got to find something sustainable. Like, you got to find something people are going to do.
Yeah. Because I mean, if you get, there's other, some of our competitors want to do it for 30 days before surgery. And first off, I mean, I'm not sure people are like that plugged into what they're going to be doing that 30 days before. And then I just think it's more likely that they might do it for the first week, 30 days out. And then the most important ones, one right before, and they might have just like, you might be sitting in the bottom of the pantry at that point, right? So, and I would say too, it's probably best if you did it before and after surgery, but between the two, I'd rather just have you bolused up with a great amount of baseline nutrition for when we actually take you to the OR.
It is something I never thought about until you said it, but it's like, it's the most intense workout most people are going to have in their life, these types of surgeries.
Yeah, they've done some really cool studies on this in the orthopedic literature. Basically, your protein basal, like, which is just your baseline rate and necessity, can go up 60% from a major surgery, right? And most people, again, as you were saying, even our friends our age aren't taking enough protein at baseline.
Yeah.
And then you're asking them, and then they're saying like, you're already deficient from that baseline, and now we're going to add a 60% stressor. And because protein fundamentally at the end of the day, it's like, it's the building blocks for all the healing that's going to take place. And at present, what happens is your liver produces a bunch of extra glucagon, and the glucose does through gluconeogenesis, which basically just means it's making a bunch of fuel. But it does that by actually breaking down your muscle cells that you already got, unless you're taking it. And so that's, again, why it's really important to make sure that you're kind of topped up, the tank's full when you go in, so that you can preserve what all muscle mass that you've already got at present anyway. And so that's where you really get it. And that's what, again, allows for the wound healing.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense.
Your immune system.
Yeah. With other use cases, like outside of just surgery, like how can this benefit people in other cases?
That's a great question. So, you know, we thought about this a decent amount, and I would say the incidence of malnutrition for a bunch of things that are physiologically stressful is incredibly high. And so it's been well proven that, you know, you go patients in the ICU, almost every single ICU patient comes out with a protein deficit and malnourished and vitamin D. Similar for patients who are obviously on chemotherapeutic regimens. You know, if you're gonna do something like, we're interested in this, we haven't, you know, done any research on this, but I'm pretty inclined to think that anybody giving birth is probably gonna be, you know, at a physiologic disadvantage if they're not supplementing. I think honestly, if you have a major athletic injury, mm-hmm. you probably need to be taking in some sort of supplement. Just make sure that you have the building blocks to heal yourself by not like robbing Peter to pay Paul, which what I mean by that is like, you're not healing your, you know, torn ligament by depleting your muscle mass. Mm-hmm. Cause you're not taking in the extra nutrients that you need, your body needs to manage that injury.
Yeah. I know with you, and you mentioned to me before we started recording, it was like your goal, you just want your patients coming in to be healthy and have the best possible surgery and outcome for them. But for Intuitive, you know, what are your goals for it? Would you like to try and get into the hospitals, or, you know, how would you like to get more people really just aware of what they need to do?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing we could do for that is stuff like this, right? Just build some awareness.
Mm-hmm.
And then hopefully with awareness, people will realize that this is a product that has some good foundation. And seems like it's, you know, doing it for the right reasons. But at the same time, obviously we would love as the business, you know, it's a startup, we're a business. We'd love to grow. It'd be amazing to get some enterprise customers, AKA hospitals, or maybe like a nursing home or something like that. But again, the problem is it's kind of like Insure and Nestle, that's like going up against Microsoft and Google.
Yeah,
what I mean by that is, what I mean by that is like Intuitive, like if you want to look at it this way, Intuitive is like, Teams and like Microsoft they give away Teams when the hospital buys Office for
everybody, yeah.
Right? I'm not joking. So it's like, it's tough. So like, you know, cause like Intuitive's Teams and then the hospital's buying Office, which is like their TP, like the IV nutrition, the tube feeds, all the other stuff that they have to have. So that's a huge, huge barrier for us. So
I know, are those contracted in together?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. They are frequently. Yeah. Right. So it's like, if you, they'll, you know, they still make, they make revenue on the sale, sell the same stuff. But what they'll say is the like, oh, if you use our more like in hospital nutrient stuff, like the IV nutrition or the tube feeding stuff, you know, if you buy us from that, we'll give you a break and like give you all the other stuff at a 50% rate. You know what I mean? Like that's just, and that's just, honestly, I can't, that's smart business, right?
Like, tough to compete with that.
And that's how Amazon makes all their money, right? That's like, that's why it's tough to break in, the barrier to entry is high. Like they've got, you know, scalability that we just don't have right now. So really too, we're hoping, honestly, I think our formulation is a little more nuanced. I think more specifically built for surgery as opposed to kind of like an add-on to like, oh, we're a nutrition company and we've got some of this stuff.
Your protein shake or something.
Yeah, the protein shake and pudding. And again, it's got a bunch of micro, like, again, I think what it separates us a little bit more is protein is the backbone of this. Don't get me wrong. Like if one takeaway is if you have a family member or you having surgery, you should take Intuitive. But the real takeaway is, you know, in bolus your nutrition, protein probably being the backbone of that. Mm-hmm. But we've got more micronutrients in there. Again, a couple more like specific vitamins and minerals that we think are important for wound healing, recovery, pain management, all that sort of stuff. So I think we're trying to hope that maybe we're a little bit more of a niche product, more of a higher end, you know, product that people could reach out for. And also, honestly, our taste is like, you have to try it to believe it, but like the number of patients that I've come back and say like, oh my gosh, that was so much better than anything I've had before.
That makes a big really difference, nice. Dude.
Well, they'll actually take it.
Yeah, for real. And like, they'll take it long term and they won't dread it. What about like the easiness, like easiest to use? Like, I know y'all wanted to kind of create a product where it was like pretty easy for the person.
Yeah. So there's two ways to think about it, right? Like again, Nestle and Ensure pre-mixed, just open it, but it's heavy, it's cumbersome, and it tastes bad. Ours comes in pre-portioned packets. Basically, you either mix it with 4 ounces of water or 8 ounces, depending on the consistency. 4 ounces gets you really tasty pudding, and 8 ounces gets you like a little bit more of a shake. Mm-hmm. And we got, you know, right now we have 2 flavors, vanilla and chocolate. I kind of feel like that covers everybody.
Yep. Give me that.
We've had a couple people that want one of each. Fine, whatever, you know, variances are, yeah, the spice of life. So, yeah, I think, you know, pre-portion, we ask you to take, basically it's a add-on, right? So you don't use it instead of your meals, you add it on like you did before or after. We like to think of it kind of probably as like a little dessert that you take for the 5 days before. And again, most, obviously this product isn't for everybody. I'm sure somebody's not going to like the taste, but I would say 9 out of 10, 99% of my patients rave about it. And they're like, that was kind of delightful. Like,
let's go.
I'm glad you liked it.
Do you, do most of your patients buy it online?
No, I have so in my office, I actually have just like a inventory. And yeah. So we'll hand, you know, that's for ease, right? My practice is nice that they've been supportive. And so if patients want it, we'll just hand it to them that day. I know they get it, but for a while we didn't have any vanilla. So if patients want a vanilla, they go online. And there's various other people's too, who I guess they think about it and we have given them QR codes and, nice. So yeah, we've had some online sales too, and that's, you know, people can go to www.imtuitive.com.
Definitely. It'll be in the show notes too.
Engineered Sleep makes the best mattresses out there. Sleep is the number one thing you can focus on right now to better your performance on a daily basis, and you might as well be sleeping on an Engineered Sleep mattress. Like I said, their products are the best, and their customer service is second to none. Their website is engineeredsleep.com. If you use promo code LIVE15, you'll get 15% off your order. So if you or someone you know is looking for a new mattress, reach out to the team at Engineered Sleep, and they'll hook you up. Again, their website is engineeredsleep.com. Use promo code LIVE15 to get 15% off your order.
With your career path, is this, I mean, obviously I know you're super passionate about what you do in the surgery room, but is this something that you kind of could see eventually being full time? Like what type of passion is this for you?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I think the devil's always in the details of that sort of consideration. I'm not gonna lie. If I could get to the point where I could decrease clinical a little bit, it would be nice to have some variability. Yeah. So as to whether or not this would become full-time, hard to say. I mean, I do really like the clinical aspect. I like engaging with my patients. I like doing the surgeries. At a certain point too, though, you need to, like, what makes a good surgeon is doing a lot of it. So there'd be a point where I wouldn't feel comfortable, like if I wasn't staying sharp enough and on top of the game, that I would probably have to go one way or the other. But right now I would say, yeah, this really got some legs. I wouldn't mind dialing back clinically to focus on this, but you know, you have to kind of just see where that takes us.
Yeah, that's, I'll
admit, that's probably a goal.
Yeah, I think that's a great balance. Like, if you could figure out that balance. And we started off by talking about your brothers, man, and you and a brother, Steven, are kind of taking this on together. How did that synergy come about?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think we've got, like, incredibly different skill sets, right? So, and I'll admit, it probably drives Steven a little nuts, but I'm busy clinically. So, like, he didn't realize, but some days he'll be texting me and, like, you know, OR, like, literally I can't respond.
Yeah. You're in a body.
Yeah. And then in the clinic, and then, like, as soon as I get out, I'm like doing paperwork, and then I go home and see the girls. Or in clinic, like, I can respond, but you don't realize, like, when you're seeing a doctor, like, it's like we're running between 30 micro meetings, like 30 or more. And so it's just, there's really not much time. You barely have time to eat during those days. So he had a little bit more bandwidth on that front. And then also he's just got the capacity, right? Like, I did some of the basic science aspects of this and like the theory behind it, and have, you know, like had some publications in some journals about this stuff. But then he does, like, I can't build a website.
Yeah.
I don't know anything about marketing. I don't know anything about like making our logo. And so he's helping with some of the day-to-day operating, you know, like he's the one that suggested, yeah, we do this. Right. So
Definitely. So
I think it's really nice. Cause again, I think we have very complementary skills, and like where one of us is weak, the other one might be a little strong. And that's also, you know, it's fun to be doing something with, family.
Yeah, man. And you're right. I mean, I know both you guys, and I think like y'all are opposite in your own ways, but definitely can work together, in the best ways. With you, man, you think you'll ever move back down south?
No, probably not.
Come on, Joe.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, I got girls who are like kind of footed up here. My wife's family's up here, so I hope they get. maybe if, like, you know, if this does really well, I can have like a second house down there.
Yeah, man, you can spend the winters down here at least.
Yeah. Well, trust me, that's like a lot of my patients actually do that. They're like older and retired, and like they come up. They're up here for the summer. They'll like see me, and then they're like, I'm going to go to Florida for like after Thanksgiving until May. Likes must be nice.
Yeah, that's a great goal. My wife's family's from Michigan, and the aunt and uncle we spend a lot of time with, they're down in Naples right now hanging out in Florida. So,
yeah, Naples, Sarasota, it's amazing. West Palm Beach is like those places, like their populations must swing wildly.
Yes, for sure.
And winter.
I'll tell you what, though. Nobody there in the summer.
Yeah, you should come up here, though. It's much nicer up here than it is in Greenville from about, or the South Carolina from about, June through October.
With it's much more tolerable, probably.
Yeah, well, there's like the humidity's lower. Yeah, you're not like, you know, I was in med school in Charleston. You'd walk outside and you try to walk across. I'd literally walk across the street in August, and I feel like the pavement's trying to eat me. I have to change my shirt.
All right. Last question. We talk about nutrition. You obviously grew up getting a lot of bomb meals from your mom. What's your favorite meal from a homemade mama cook?
Oh, that is on the spot. Poof. She makes, I mean, just her basic pot. So yeah, she's half Italian. Her pasta or pizza, and then like homemade salads, or like you get a combo of that, it's just hard to beat. I mean, like the homemade pizza crust is just phenomenal. So I'd say, yeah, probably one of those. And then she also makes, every once in a while, these special occasions, she makes some potato gnocchi. Yeah, so some on the Italian front with a homemade salad, which is, my mom's got a heavy salt in, but I like it. So that's like
without a doubt. You and the family got any travels coming up?
Yeah, we're gonna go to Florida for a week to get out of the cold up here. I'm taking the girls. That'll be a learning experience to see how it does with a 3-year-old and a 6-month-old in one hotel room. But we'll see how that.
I guess maybe because they're still too young. But you got any girl dad advice for? I got a bunch of friends with girls right now.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of people I know have girls. They're different. Yeah, it's way different than boys. I feel like what I've realized is, you know, I feel like with boys you can be a little hard on them. Mm-hmm. I don't think that don't work so well for girls. You just gotta. you gotta love them. You don't want to spoil them at the same time. Like, you know, you gotta set boundaries, but I would just be supportive at all times. It's probably the best thing to do.
Without a doubt. And I'll tell you this, coming from an older sister, I think if you end up having another one, I don't know if you do or not, but if you have a boy, they will be like better prepared to be like nicer and better with girls as they grow up.
I feel bad for my wife all the time. She's like, she has to deal with me, and like, I have no like emotional bandwidth. I'm pretty confident it's because like we were raised in like a house of six men, and my poor mom who's like basically like had to like morph into like male like behaviors. But my point being is like, I 100% agree with you. That has to be true.
Yeah, without a doubt. Well, Dr. Joe, man, it's been a pleasure. I'm pumped to see y'all grow. And I think there's some really cool other opportunities outside of just like hospitals to get this product in. And I mean, the importance of nutrition is just so important in general anyways for people to understand. So the more education, the more Intuitive is going to grow. I'm excited to see where it goes. Thank you for joining me. All the links will be in the show notes, but it was a pleasure having you on.
Yeah, Sam, I really appreciate the time, and it's been really cool to watch what this has become for you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening. Give our partners some love by visiting their links in the show notes. Spink's Convenience Stores, you can find the location nearest you. Rebel Rabbit Seltzers, they're on a mission to socialize healthier and smarter, so join the mission. And Engineered Sleep, making the best mattresses in the game. You might as well be sleeping on an Engineered Sleep mattress. For me, if you could give our show a 5-star rating on your listening platform, that'd be greatly appreciated. And thank you so much for listening.